Welcome to the Talking Ed Podcast, presented by GSBA, a show that makes discussing public education policy interesting. Here's your host, Angela, Scott, and Justin.
All right, welcome to the GSBA Podcast. Welcome back, Angela, Scott. How are you guys doing in all this pandemic chaos?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Okay.
I'm doing good. Just, you know, spending time with the new baby and hanging out at home. It seems like it works out well for me. I don't know about y'all.
It did work out well for you.
It did. I know
Justin. Yeah, I'm tired of being home.
I know Justin, yeah. You got a couple little ones at home. You're having to homeschool, so.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It presents its challenges. There's positives and negatives, Scott. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a long list of things that wanted to touch on. A few of the first initial things is the federal response and the CARES Act. Scott, I know you've really kept up with a lot going on there. What do you want to start off on?
Yeah, I mean, so the CARES Act, I think we touched on it briefly in our last podcast, but I think that was before. I mean, it's been a little while. I think that was before they even passed anything.
Right.
You know, since then, they've passed the CARES and then a supplement to CARES geared at the Paycheck Protection portion of that bill. But in terms of our membership, the thing that's kind of important that came out of CARES was the money for local schools. And just this past week, we got some solid numbers coming out from the state, the Department of Education. I wonder what that means for each of our local districts. And they sent out guidance this week on how much each district can expect, and the state board approved that. It sounds great. I mean, it's a lot of money on the whole. If you think about it, it's what, $400+ million. But when you start breaking it out district by district, it's not a ton, especially with, I think, what we're gonna move into next. Was the other big news of the week, or the appropriations chairs of the House and Senate said, hey, we're looking at a 14% cut across the board, including QBE. Needless to say, these CARES funds will not fill that gap for the overwhelming majority of districts.
Yeah, and also another thing to remember with the CARES Act money was that it's distributed by the Title I formula, not on a per pupil basis. So districts that don't have a lot of Title I kids or a smaller percentage got less of the money than the districts that have a large number of them, but it's not limited to Title I expenditures. There's no, the same kind of allowances for Title I money are not on this one. And the other good thing about this one is that the CARES money can be spent through September 2022. So if somebody got a lot of money, then that's probably very helpful to them. If they got a smaller amount, then they probably will be using it in 2021.
Yeah. Right, and some of this money will come very close to bridging that 14% state gap for next fiscal year. A lot of districts, though, they won't come close. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. They won't come close. So you may need to look at this money over the end of 20, all of 21, and then into 22 if we're looking at fiscal years.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's just looking at it in relation to the 14% state cut that the legislature is kind of throwing out there. That's not to say what's going to happen to local revenue, what's going to happen to state revenue past, you know, we're only in May. I mean, it's the beginning of May. We don't know what's going to happen down the road. This just sets up at least the groundwork for what could be a very tight budget session coming up.
Well, that's a good transition, Scott, because in light of yesterday's Georgia House and Senate Appropriations virtual meeting, kind of fill us in, because I know there's lots of discussion around this 14% cut, but it doesn't seem like we're really 100% sure. It's like 14% give or take. Can you guys get us a little bit up to speed on based on the conversation yesterday during that virtual meeting?
They mentioned their memo to the state agencies and districts with the 14% cut. But actually the majority of the meeting was spent listening to Dr. Jeffrey Dorfman, the state economist, and then Kelly Farr, the director of OPB. Most of the time was with the economist to try to get an understanding around the national economy and the state to see if they can get any idea of where we're headed here. And then Kelly Farr could obviously address more of the state agency side of things. It's very
director OPB, right?
Right.
Office of
It's very interesting in this time because all of us have been home. Either we're working from home or people have been laid off and can't work. And so they're home, which gives everybody a lot of time to be on Twitter, be on Facebook, read the news, watch the news, whichever channel or all the channels or whatever. And so people have a lot more time to get into this and hear it constantly. And one of the things that Dr. Dorfman talked about was the lack of consumer confidence and that putting the virus portion of this aside and when everybody is not catching anymore, the economy won't turn around until the consumer confidence is back. And it seems like with everybody at home and listening to all this stuff and reading this stuff on a continual basis, that really just undermines the confidence because we're constantly hearing how bad it is.
Right.
There's not a lot out there that's saying, you know, this is turning around and this really isn't so bad. And this is, and so that's an interesting dynamic, this whole issue. And obviously the numbers are bad. The revenue report came out day before yesterday that showed a tremendous drop, down 36% from the previous year. Scott?
Yeah, I want to go back to your point on consumer confidence. I think that's an interesting kind of path we can kind of wander down for a second. Because we hear all these numbers about how consumer confidence is way down, but just even in my area, just driving around and going to stores to, you know, grocery shop or pick up things for the house, you're starting to see more and more people out. You're starting to see more cars on the road. And I think Dorfman touched on this yesterday, where they saw at the peak, just looking at traffic patterns, at the peak where they saw that 50% of traffic was dropped off the roads. There just wasn't, you know, half the traffic was just not there as expected. And those numbers are starting to climb back up. So I do question a little bit those consumer confidence models, because just seeing around in our neighborhoods and in our local stores, people are starting to get out more. People are starting to do more things. And they said, another one of his points in relation to traffic is you're seeing more semi-trucks where they drop by 30 or 40%, they're back to normal now. And so you're starting to see the supply lines fill back up. So there is confidence, I think, returning. I just don't think we're seeing it yet. And you're right to the point. I mean, there's not a lot of good news on any pick your 3 to 4 letter network. There's not a lot of good news out there that's being reported. You kind of have to go search for good news. You have to go find the good news. And fortunately, there is good news out there. There is good news to be seen, positive trends. But until those things are felt by everyone, we won't see this economic rebound. But, you know, we saw last weekend where Piedmont Park was completely packed. We saw where local restaurants are starting to have people sit down eating there. So, you know, Dorfman touched on kind of some of the unemployment numbers and kind of noted that there are, I don't want to put words in his mouth, they're not artificially high, but he said a lot of these folks who are filing for unemployment with these huge numbers, well, a lot of them are restaurant and retail workers who are going to be going back to work hopefully in the next month or so.
I was interested when he was talking about the unemployment. It was surprising to me that 75% of the applicants have been for partial unemployment.
Right.
So and they're still working, and I was not expecting it to be that high.
Right. And so those, he, again, he didn't sound optimistic, but he did sound extremely, extremely cautiously optimistic that there could be a quicker recovery than maybe some people expect.
Yeah. And just for reference, for our listeners, Dr. Jeff Dorfman is the state economist who was presenting to the House and Senate chairs.
Yeah, back to the confidence thing. I think it's going to vary from community to community. And for those of you listening, Scott lives in Cherokee. Justin and I live in Fulton, very close to each other, actually. So we kind of have the same impression of the community and what it's doing, except that Justin's younger, so he can go out. And has kids. So he's probably been out more than I have. And there again, it goes back to whatever your experience of this is. And if you are going out, you have a better idea of how many people are going out. I don't see a lot of people out, but I'm not out a lot either. And so my very simple bellwether of my consumer confidence that we've turned this around and we are just going to be fine is when there is toilet paper on the shelves and nobody is looking for it. We all just expect to have toilet paper there.
And I think it's funny because we've discussed this. I mean, it's certainly an indicator here in Fulton, but, you know, I know for you, Scott, there hasn't been any, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to use the toilet paper index.
That's my metric.
If we're going to use the toilet paper index, then, you know, Cherokee's, yeah. I've seen it in the stores, so it's actually been around. So maybe people here are just feeling a little more comfortable. I don't know.
Yeah.
As it relates to the budget, was there anything you guys wanted to add to that, or do you kind of want to walk at this point through what to expect kind of this next month or so?
Well, one thing I found interesting was we saw 2 days ago there was the report that came out that said, oh, we're roughly $1 billion short of revenue for the month of April. That the report came out, it's $1 billion short. And House Ways and Means Chair Brett Harrell came out and said, oh, well, you know, it's just because they moved the income tax deadline back. So we didn't get a bunch of income tax. It'll be okay. That was not the feeling on the call yesterday. They kind of blew that off a little bit and said, no, this is going to be a problem. And that was kind of surprising that people who are looking at the same numbers were taking kind of different tracks on this.
Yeah, because when you look at the revenue report, every area was down. The only tax areas that were up over the previous year were alcohol and tobacco. And so they were kind of joking around a little bit that people were enjoying being home.
And there was also a large increase. There was also a large increase in online retail.
Yeah,
which makes sense.
Sorry, that was but that's not split out in the revenue report itself. We saw it in his slides.
Yeah.
If Brett Harrell's bill had already passed and been signed before we left for delivery of alcohol to homes, the alcohol tax would have been way up. So we missed an opportunity there. But I know one question I'd had during this and the numbers was, what impact has the internet sales tax been? And Dr. Dorfman, I think it was his presentation, did spell that out and said it was up 18% or something like that. Anyway, he said the marketplace facilitator bill that was passed this session and had just got, it went into effect April 1st, that he had estimated in January it would bring in about $10 million a month, and now he would move that up to about $15 million a month for the rest of this year. So that will help some. And retail sales obviously are down, but the internet portion was up. I thought it would be up more than it was, actually.
Does the tax deadline play into any of this? File your taxes? Because, I mean, everyone would have filed their taxes by April 15th.
Right, and that's what Brett Harrell was referring to whenever he said that the deficit is really just because the deadline moved, because that means the taxes come in, whoever owes money to the state is delayed until July, which will put it in the 21 budget. But that also means the refunds. If people didn't go ahead and file and they get a refund, the refunds are going to come out of 21 too.
Right.
So it does have a big effect of what's available now. Although I think it's important to point out to people listening that while the revenue is falling during FY20, and we obviously have a hole, there is no discussion about lowering the revenue estimate or doing any kind of cut on FY20, the year we're in. That budget has been signed, and they said yesterday, and I've heard them say this before, that if we, coming out of this towards the end of the fiscal year, that the rainy day fund can be used to fill up whatever kind of hole there is. Because whenever we went through the Great Recession, the fiscal year that we were in kept getting cut. And so school districts had to keep responding to that. And for those who were around then, that has probably come to mind and wonder if that was going to happen, but there's no discussion of doing that. The sole discussion around that is whatever we don't get in the revenue that the Rainy Day Fund could be used.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's always the possibility hanging out there that Congress will take, you know, further legislative action in the summer. I know Majority Leader McConnell is kind of slow playing that a little bit, taking the mindset of, hey, we've just passed $4 trillion worth of spending bills. Let's see how this plays out before we spend any more. So there's a thought that maybe some more state aid will be coming later in the summer, which could kind of help as we get into the next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good. And as far as the 14% cuts, that is across the board. Everybody gets the same cut. I have thought that they would eventually come back to, get the information what it's going to look like, 14%, but then come back to being more surgical about it as opposed to just chopping up 14%, and being more deliberate about that. But that's not really what I'm hearing now, that whatever happens, everybody pays the same price.
So I know the directive was the 14% cut to the state agencies. That also applies to school districts?
Yes, the state agencies, every program and every agency budget, including QBE.
Gotcha.
So as the department moves through their budget, it would be a cut from the central office, from school improvement, from testing, from the QBE programs, the non-QBE programs, everything. And the same for the other state agencies. Everything in their budgets has to be touched. Now, the state agencies had already cut 6% out of their 21 budgets. But QBE and Medicaid and I think the universities were all exempted from that. So this is the first cut for them.
Yeah, and on the state board call, was it earlier this week, DOE staff sounded a little, not worried, they seemed a little kind of at ease with some of these cut numbers are coming out because they had already planned some of these bigger cuts through the direction from Governor Kemp earlier this year.
So the 14%, it's not the 6% from the directive last year plus the 14%. It's the 14% includes the 6%.
I believe so. I have not seen anything in writing that says that, but I believe so. Whatever they had, and when they applied the 6% cut, they let the agencies find it. They just told them how much 6% was and said, find this much in cuts. And so they didn't, I know DOE didn't, and I don't think the other agencies did either. They didn't take 6% out of each area. They some areas were able to take a bigger hit than others. And so, for instance, one area might have gotten a 9% cut. And so now they just have to find 5% more in that area. But if they had protected something completely, then it's going to get the whole 14%.
Okay.
So it's sort of complicated, but I think that goes back to they're trying to just do this across the board and not play favorites with anybody.
Yeah.
Well, looking forward now to the General Assembly, what should we expect going forward at this point?
You know, that's a great question. They're going to start back here soon. I mean, I think the date going out, floating out there is June 11th. Speaker Ralston has said that's when he wants to come back, and I haven't seen firm where the lieutenant governor has said that's when the Senate's going to come back, but I've seen it intimated in places that that's kind of the agreed upon date. So they'll come back, and what they actually do when they come back is kind of to be seen.
Yeah, they have 11 legislative days left that they can use. Now, whether they actually use all 11 or get done in a shorter time, we don't know. Will they come back and just do the budget and leave? Don't know. Will they come back and do the budget and have a couple of other priority bills? Probably. But will they go full-blown and pick everything back up from where we were? I don't know. That way, it would be after the primary, so they'll have that out of the way. And it'll be a waste of November, so they don't have election or campaigning incumbent upon them that they couldn't take 2 weeks out. It does seem like that they would be more inclined to just go straight through whatever time they're going to take. And not normally when we get towards the end of the session, they do a couple of days and then take off. They might have a committee day and give the budget committees time to start working out the differences. I'm not sure they'll do that this time. Kind of depends on where we are with the virus thing when we get to mid-June.
So yeah. Technically with the session is technically still in, so they can't raise money, correct?
Correct.
And right. So I can't imagine they would want to prolong not being able to raise money.
Right. Well, at that point, it won't really matter for the primary.
Yeah, the primary will be gone. So
right.
I mean, as I said, I think a lot of it's going to come down to what the protocols are at the time we get to June 11th or whatever the date's going to be, how prevalent the virus still is. We have a number of members of the General Assembly who are 65 or more or have some other kind of health problem. Mm-hmm. And so if we're still at some point where that population still needs to be careful or be more mindful, or if we're still under the protocol of 6 feet apart, that makes it more difficult for them to operate in their normal manner. So I'm not sure how close we are to them actually knowing what it will be like and what they will do.
My guess is session looks extremely different than what it looked like back in March. I mean, the only precautions they took in March were, hey, there are signs up that says, hey, you know, wash your hands. No handshaking. I think it's going to be a lot more then. But then it kind of dives into the question of, Angela and I spoke about this offline, are they going to require masks? Can they require masks? It's a government building. What are the things they're going to be that are they going to take temperatures as you're walking in the door? Is that thought? I don't know. There's a lot of questions that are hanging out there. They may already have them.
Yeah, and Speaker Ralston, the week before we left, the last week we were at the Capitol, had already suspended the PAGE program. So I don't know that when they come back, if they would bring the PAGEs back or not. The Senate had continued to operate under normal circumstances, but the speaker had stopped pages, and I believe he stopped any guests into the chamber so that it was just the legislators in there. And I don't know how they'll operate. We've Scott and I've also wondered the public part of this. Do they allow people into the Capitol? Do we have meetings like we normally have meetings? Will they just like webcast from a committee room with the committee members and ask the public to stay away and handle public comments in a different way? I don't know. There's a lot of questions, and I just think it's going to be circumstantial based on what's happening whenever we get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's as we're recording this, it's what, May 8th. They're supposed to allow staff back in those buildings in 11 days. If you're going to allow staff and then you're going to allow members to come in, mean, you have to have this nailed down on kind of what it's going to look like. Yeah, 10 days.
That's true. I forgot they were letting the staff come in early.
As of right now, I guess, for example, like the appropriations are doing some meetings virtually. I wonder if there's an opportunity for some other committees to meet virtually so that they can still conduct business, just not in the Capitol.
Well, yeah, and I think it goes back to the question of what are they going to take up? What are they going to do? Because if they're only going to take up the budget and a handful of other kind of spending bills, does education need to meet? Probably not. I don't know if they'll say we're going to go ahead and meet knowing that our bills aren't going to make it to the floor and put some folks in that room, because there are guys and ladies on both those House and Senate who probably would meet the high risk criteria. You can really bring them into a room where this data is showing that being in a room with other people for hours at a time is when the disease gets transmitted. So are you going to make them do that for a bill that's not going to pass? It's not going to make it to the floor?
Right.
I don't know.
I would imagine we would, I guess we're going to know in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, is there anything you guys wanted to add as it relates to kind of what's been going on, federal, state response, General Assembly, or other?
No, I think that the Department of Education has done a good job during this of trying to keep up with everything that was happening so quickly and trying to provide guidance to the districts. There's been, between DOE and the governor's office, there's been a very strong effort to respect local control and to leave decision making largely up to them. But at the same time, providing some guidance or making recommendations or whatever to the districts. And there were so many things for the end of the year that they had to figure out. The grading, promotion, how do you know if the child's ready for the next grade? What do you do about that? All the waivers that came federally and from the state. There were so many things. It was like every day there was something new that we had to figure out or understand. And I'm sure that those out in the district just felt like they were drinking from a million fire hoses. And I think probably the department and the governor's office felt the same way.
Yeah.
But I do think that they've done a good job of living up to what they always say, that they're there to support the districts. And I think the governor's office has done a good job. The governor and his office has done a good job of respecting the authority. When something's going on, it's awfully easy to decide, all right, I'm just going to make the decision and make it clean and do this, as opposed to stepping aside and saying, okay, here's what I think should happen, but it's up to you. So obviously Governor Kemp did make some decisions specifically related around the public health part of it, but when it came to operational stuff, he stepped out of the way for DOE and the districts.
Yeah. Scott?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel the same way as Angela on a lot of that. I think the department has done a fantastic job. On a bigger picture, I'll kind of say I'll reserve my comments for maybe one night at the conference. Somebody sees me at the downstairs, we can talk about this. And just, I think as a country, we have to kind of look in the mirror after this and kind of answer some questions that I don't think people really want to talk about right now. We got a lot of things we need to figure out and use this as a learning experience, because there are a lot of things that we could have done better and all the way around. And we kind of need to learn from this and move forward.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. We do have a couple of items that I wanted to touch on right before we sign off. We're in the midst of Teacher Appreciation Week. And, I think it's important to also recognize our 2020 graduates, whether it's high school, college, graduate school, just all the different types of graduates that would have normally been going through the ceremonial process and with a lot of excitement. And so we just want to say congratulations to those folks and for the teachers. You know, as a father with two girls, I know for me, but probably for many, many other parents, there's a renewed appreciation for teachers. I think sometimes that's, you know, you kind of have to get forced into the role to better understand it. And I think we certainly have. And I think as parents, many of us are very close to ready to hand our students back to the teachers. But is there, along those lines, are there anything that you guys want to add?
You know, I just think back to both my high school and my college graduations and think about how special those days were. And, you know, my high school graduation was fantastic, but my college graduation really stands out. And just, again, how special of a day that was, kind of all the hard work kind of culminating and getting your degree and walking across the stage and having your family there. That's been the hardest thing for me, kind of watching on the outside, is seeing some of these kids who aren't going to get to experience that, and knowing how special of a day it was for me and for my family and all that. And that's, you know, unfortunate that they're not going to get to experience that. And hopefully something's made up down the road, but it's just been, that's been weighing on me. And I think about them, especially right now when they should be walking across the stage.
Yeah.
I think high school graduation particularly is a large milestone for many of us. And it's funny, the things that you remember. I'm sure every graduate class gets instructions on how you're supposed to behave and what you can and can't do. But I'll date myself a little bit here. But when I was graduating, there was a very famous commercial at the time for T-Berry gum that was a cinnamon gum. And there was a T-Berry shuffle in the commercial. And it became very popular. Everybody was doing the T-Berry shuffle. It was just like jumping and skipping all the time. So before we started at our practice, it was like, you cannot do the T-Berry shuffle. If you do the T-Berry shuffle, you're done. We're like, okay, we're graduating. What are you going to do? But anyway, so of course, somebody had to do it. And it was as if the sky had just fallen. You know, when you look back, I was like, what was so bad about somebody enjoying themselves and just doing that? So, but it made it very memorable. I'll remember that. So I do regret it for the kids who are graduating this year, and hope that their schools are finding ways to recognize them and give them a special time. You know, today is also the 75th anniversary of the victory in Europe. And that's another time period where a lot of kids graduated in wartime. A lot of boys left to enlist and serve in the war and didn't graduate and were recognized later. And they didn't get the same kind of celebration necessarily during those war years. And so it's interesting to think about the various times in history that we have had to do things differently. And just because we have to do them differently doesn't mean we can't do something. And so I hope that everybody like us are remembering the kids, whatever level they are, and recognizing the work they've put in and that their teachers have put in. Which brings us back to teacher appreciation. And obviously none of us would be here without the teachers that we had had. I had some great teachers. I had some very unmemorable teachers. Some teachers I liked, some liked me, some did not. And so I appreciate all the work that they do. And I think all of us probably can think of one teacher in particular that had a major impact on them. And so maybe during this teacher appreciation and extended period of learning and doing things differently, we all just take a minute to remember who it was that had the impact on us and why it was. And is there a way to pay that forward? If it's doing nothing but just acknowledging teachers in general.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've covered a good bit. I know we've given a good update on the things that we are aware of and we do know. There still remains to be a lot of uncertainty out there, whether it's just through the virus or if we're just looking at trying to conduct business to figure out some semblance of normal. But we'll keep posting and keep updating, and please look for podcasts in the future. Visit gsba.com, and thanks for joining us.